This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello and welcome to Paranormal Pets. I'm your host, Brandi Stark, and for once, I am coming to you from Des Moines, Iowa, of all places. So I was invited to be a speaker. I got to explore Des Moines, and I got into a little bit of their paranormal phenomenon out there. So I thought I'd share it with you, the listeners. And we will actually start that right after these messages.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, welcome back. So it's been a little while. It's been a couple months, I'm afraid, but I wanted to catch everybody up on some of the fun that I've been having. So the pug Grumble here has grown by 2. I now have baby Penthusala and her sister, Perseus. They were unexpected, but they were a unique opportunity at 4 months old, and they are litter mates. If you do not remember from years ago, I had Pandora and Grace, who were littermate sisters. And I also had Odysseus and Achilles, who were littermate brothers. And then right now, I also have another set of siblings. So Ajax and Calypso are half siblings, but they are about a year and a half apart. But Pandora, well, Grace passed away about 2.5-3 years ago, and Pandora passed away in January. And the house just... If you have pets, there's just a certain energy that your house has, and my house did not have it. And so when these sisters were available, we had to drive out to the middle of nowhere, Florida, Floral City. I literally could not find the address on Waze. I think I had to go into Google Maps. I mean, it was crazy. It was way out there. But I did pick them up, and Penthusala, or Penny for short, was the runt. And so I'm really hoping she stays petite. And Briseis is what I'm calling my bonus sister. And so we have these two girls. So I'm hoping that they are behaving for the podcast. They literally just came back from being spayed yesterday. And you wouldn't know it. Those must be some good pain pills. But they're very, very sweet. And my house really feels complete again. I've got my black pug. I've got my boys. I've got my girls. And now I have ages ranging from 13 years old to 6 months. We're not doing any more puppies. I can't do any more puppies. 3 years of puppies, that's enough. So that was the first thing that happened. And then I was invited to speak at a venue called DemiCon. DemiCon is kind of a literary science fiction homegrown convention. It follows a lot of fandoms. It's very similar to our local Necronomicon that takes place in Tampa every year. And I have a really big soft spot for homegrown grassroots conventions that they tend to be smaller, but they have heart in them. They raise money for charity. It's a really good group of people. And I was there last year, but with the zoo that I have here, and of course, I am a caretaker for my mother, who is 80 and showing definite signs of age, I was only able to be there overnight last year. So I was literally in the air as long as I was at the convention. It was that quick. But they invite me to speak because of my paranormal prowess. And so they asked me back again this year. And I did two talks, one on the evolution of the zombie from revenant to zombie. So kind of a compare and contrast from the Middle Ages to modernity, and how those reflect our cultural fears and our cultural expectations. And then I did a talk on what we have found in St. Petersburg, and I had videos and sound files. So it was a lot of fun. And unlike last year, I felt a little more comfortable this year. I got to stay for two whole nights. I had a pet sitter who was supposed to stay literally for the 2.5 days, you know, I was paying her for that. And all I can tell you is that in the middle of it, she suddenly wasn't feeling well and started going back and forth between the houses. And I don't know if the pets were too much or if there was something on her end, but I was a little disappointed. I literally cleaned up my house for 2 months because as an artist, I have stuff everywhere. I got that all sorted and put away. My bathroom broke down. I got that fixed for something like $700 so that she wouldn't have to scoop water out of the bathtub when she took a shower. You know, I took all of the pets in because one was due for the rabies shot, one had allergies, and one had a bladder infection, and I want to get all that taken care of. And if you have pets, you know that's expensive. And I did all of this. I mean, it was literally 2 months of work to go away for 2 days. And I was a little bit disappointed, but it was interesting because I mentioned if they asked me back next year, and this person said, well, they might not be available. They're planning a trip. And I'm thinking, okay, so I don't know if I'm going to get to go back. So I thought maybe I would go ahead and share a little bit with you. Now, when it comes to Des Moines, Iowa, I have been saying for 2 years now that they hide their ghosts well. I do research on the areas because I love going to a place and finding their dead, right? That's my deal. And so there are basically the same places listed over and over in the city. And if you've never been to the Midwest is kind of spread out. So, you know, if I'm going to a location, I try to pack in as much stuff as possible. So is there anything that I can use when I teach the humanities? So, you know, I asked about indigenous cultures, any ruins. Those are on the east side of the state. Okay. I'm a Star Trek fan. Captain Kirk comes from Riverside, Iowa, which is an actual place, but that's 2 hours away and I didn't have a car. So I couldn't do that. They talk about the Axe Murder House, where in 1911, a family of six and their daughter's two friends were all slaughtered with an axe. Very, very gruesome. And that is actually a paranormal tourist spot, but that's also a distance away. And then they have this mysterious black angel that allegedly the eyes will light up red at night. And of course, that's another hour away. There is nothing there. They didn't have any ghost tours. The History Museum was in downtown, which is 25 minutes away. So it was really interesting. But when I did my research, there were, as I mentioned, kind of the same spots over and over. So one is the Des Moines Airport, which has the cloud room. I did check into that last year, and I did go back into it briefly this year. Then there was the Woodlawn Cemetery. Everybody in the world points you out to the cemetery in Des Moines, including people that I was asking from the convention. And it is the oldest cemetery there, and it has something like 66,000 burials. It is an immense cemetery. So that was on my list of places to go, but I wasn't sure how I'd get there for one. And two, I was an out-of-towner and I would have been by myself walking through the cemetery. And even during the day, the world's a weird place these days. And the Midwest is even more bizarre to me than Florida is. I guess I'm used to the Florida weirdness, but the Midwest is kind of, well, take no offense, it's just different, I guess. So I wasn't really sure, considering the fact that I couldn't find a paranormal team, ghost tours, nothing out there. It was incredible. So I had that kind of on my list. But of course, the days that I was there, it was going to rain. I'm thinking, okay. So I ended up, I just started asking folks. I said, you know, I'm a paranormal investigator from Florida and I'm doing this talk. And it was interesting because the first thing that happened was literally on the flight out, and this was May 3rd. And May 3rd, if you don't know, is World Paranormal Day. And I had brought a couple of items to demonstrate in case I happened to also find a place to investigate, I could use them as well. And one was an EMF meter that I use on my haunted tours because it lights up and it's relatively inexpensive. And if anything happened to it, I would not be completely torn up. I'm not taking my tri-field on the plane. So, and I was not checking any bags because this was basically a two-night trip and I am poor. So I'm like, nope, no baggage. I'm going to carry it with me. I managed to shove 2 days worth of clothes and my computer and a little bit of equipment into a carry-on and off we went. So I actually was going through Tampa International Airport and I got pulled out of the screening line. The reason was that EMF meter. And you have to understand, I have traveled with my paranormal stuff before and never had an issue. But I got pulled out this time because they didn't recognize what it was. And I'm like, I'm a paranormal investigator. That's an EMF meter. The cool thing was that the security woman who was talking with me, who had to dig through my bags and undo all of my very careful packing, but I got it back in there. It's okay. Now, mind you, I made that plane by 15 minutes. I've never been quite so close to missing a plane until my return trip. And we'll get to that. But anyway. And she was really interested in the supernatural. So I gave her a Spirits of St. Petersburg card and hopefully she'll check out our site. So that was just like, wow, World Paranormal Day. And I get to celebrate by being pulled out of line. That's great. So anyway, got up to Des Moines and there were a few different things that happened. So the first thing was that people started pointing out, number one, I started getting their personal haunted stories, which was a first. And nobody looked at me like I was crazy this time. So I was very glad for that. Because, of course, I come in with my, you know, my Florida tan and my bright blue hair. And, you know, I'm talking about ghosts in the middle of, you know, kind of the Rust Bible Belt area. And I was like, you guys, don't you have any ghosts? Because I'm only finding the same ones. There's a university that has some ghosts. There's supposed to be a high school. I can't get into those. I've already been to the airport. I'm thinking about the cemetery, but is there anywhere else? And lo and behold, yes, there was. There was a place called Merle Hay Mall, which is only about a mile away from the hotel. And it turns out that they could shuttle me there. And so I got to check this out. But I started getting some paranormal stories. The first one that I heard was about a fellow who had an NDE, near-death experience, and he had heart issues. That was the reason for the NDE. He actually died about 6 years ago, and they brought him back. And he noticed that he had moved into a new apartment, and when he went home from the hospital, strange things began to happen. And this woman, who was actually my shuttle driver, said that she saw at least two odd things. And she said he was afraid to tell people because they would all think he was crazy. But one thing was that she watched the TV console get knocked off. And apparently this was kind of a heavy thing and there was no reason for it to have moved whatsoever. And it, you know, she said it was like somebody shoved it, you know, while she was sitting in the living room with him. And on a second visit, he had a Bluetooth speaker that was not on or hooked up to anything. And all of a sudden it turned itself on and they could hear a woman speaking. And she said it was really garbled or like somebody speaking in tongues and they couldn't recognize the language, but it lasted about 12 to 15 seconds. This Bluetooth was in his bedroom and they were in the living room. And she was like, I am not checking that out. So apparently the fellow has moved and activity has been fine since then. So, hey, all right, good. The second thing that I did learn was that the area around the cemetery is haunted. I had several or at least two different stories about people who either lived near the cemetery or who's had family who lived near the cemetery. And one person said that her grandmother was taking pictures and they had this odd orb image that showed up right in front of her. And she said, you know, she was a teenager, an early teen, maybe around 12. So they called in a ghost hunting group and the ghost hunting group wanted her to replicate this. And so she kind of stood in the same place as when her grandmother was taking pictures. And she said when they started taking pictures themselves, it was like somebody punched her in the gut. And of course, you know, she said it was like I fell over my handlebars on a bike or something like that. She couldn't breathe. And that was really interesting. And I asked about the teen and she could not remember who it was. So I was kind of sad on that one. But okay, so there was one. And then the second one actually did have a bit of a paranormal pet story to it. So there was a husband and wife couple, I believe, who were at my second presentation, and they started talking about, or they actually asked me how to protect their home because they live near the cemetery. And the gentleman actually worked at a government-run institution that was also massively haunted. Apparently, it at one point had been a mental health institution or something along those lines, and they had all sorts of phenomenon. But it was his wife who was saying, you know, how do I keep my home protected? Because I'm right next to the cemetery and some things happen. You know, so I gave her my general advice. And then the husband popped in and said, well, and you know, we have a ghost cat now. And I'm like, really? Okay, tell me about this. So he basically said that they had a ghost cat, that they had bought the house, and that apparently this ghost cat was there when they bought it because they didn't have a cat. They didn't move in with a cat. They had never had a cat before. And the phenomenon was that you kind of like, particularly when the wife was going to bed, she said it would feel like you feel something jump on the bed and like curl up on your stomach, like knead, bread kneading, like the dough kneading, right? Biscuits, making biscuits, there it is. And then curl up and go to sleep on her stomach. And she's like, and there's nothing there. And so what they ended up deciding to do was they got a real cat to see what would happen and see if that would settle the household. And I guess it must have worked, you know, so they now have a living cat and this ghost cat, and apparently there are no real issues. So I was very impressed with that. That's a way to do it. So that was kind of cool. And speaking of which, while I was there, I found one of their local publications. And I ended up doing a quick recording because it was a story about Woodlawn Cemetery, one of the caretakers, a couple of the people who died, and then this hero dog who saved the family of the grave cemetery caretaker. So we are going to pop that in here so that you also can hear the story and learn a little bit more about the oldest cemetery in Iowa. So on my last day here in Des Moines, I thought I would read an article to you from the City View, your city, your style, your news. We are Des Moines. This is their summer edition. And it's kind of cool because it reminds me very much of the articles that I write for the Northeast Journal. It's kind of a happy publication. But Woodlawn Cemetery is one place that I didn't quite get to, which is unfortunate, but I've heard it's haunted. People have told me about multiple haunted houses actually around the cemetery, which is really interesting. And there's a little article in here entitled, this is from Joe's Neighborhood, Two Characters and a Dog in Woodlawn Cemetery by Joe Wieg. So I thought I would read it. The graves sprawl over the bright green and faded brown grass like grazing cattle over the stubble of an Iowa cornfield. That's a visual. Narrow blacktop roads meander here and there across the 65 acres. Pools of sunshine dance on the white granite tombstones and the half-buried markers of gray river rock. While the many trees with small leafing buds stand quietly in respect, Woodlawn Cemetery is on the cusp of spring. Mike Rowley tells a story. More than 100 years ago, there was an undertaker preparing a body, and this dog appeared and always seemed to be underfoot. So the days go by, and they have the funeral at the cemetery. Again, they see the dog off to the side. The burial takes place. The caretaker at Woodlawn Cemetery notices this dog still hanging around this guy's grave. So they try to give the dog some food and water. Mike Rowley is a big man, broad shoulders, wide smile, well-spoken. Unsurprisingly, a retired pharmaceutical salesman, surprisingly a collector of stories, a curious historian, and the savior of many a grave in Woodlawn Cemetery. My dad died when I was about 8. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. I was the youngest in my family. I always had a natural interest in history. Never made any money off it, though. Mike speaks with the subdued intensity that is hidden behind his smile and a quick laugh. Don't be fooled, folks. He has a plan. And since he is bigger than his skin, he tries not to overwhelm his listener with his enthusiasm for whatever that plan is. We were in cemeteries all the time as the old relatives died off. I always thought cemeteries were fascinating, and I wondered what that guy did or what he or she did. Why interest in the small stories? It's not the headlines that make people tick. It's the little untold things. Mike smiles. Maybe I like the small stories better because I have a short attention span. Ha! Huh. Or maybe it's from touching your own tombstone. Mike was awarded the 2023 Lifetime Achievement Award from Des Moines Park and Recreation. Michael Rowley, whose relationship with Des Moines cemeteries began more than 6 decades ago, has worked tirelessly to honor and remember those laid to rest within them. Raleigh has spent countless hours researching stories, planning cemetery projects, and curating our city's history. Days go by and the dog will not leave. It's really getting famished. Finally, the caretaker's wife gets the dog to come home with them. Dog's name is Queen. Mary Christopher, a realtor in the Des Moines area with VIA, a group of mature realtors who help each other rather than compete, according to Mary, just wrote a book with Mike, Woodland Cemetery in Des Moines, A History. I decided to do this book on Woodland Cemetery because there really wasn't a book of all the stories. I approached Mike by accident. He was leaning over a grave, and we were introduced. How appropriate. Mary smiles easily and speaks of cemeteries with the bright eyes of a young kid showing you their favorite toy. I love cemeteries. I can't travel without stopping at every cemetery. I don't know why I love it. It's a little creepy, but I love it. But Mary's no dreaming kid. She is a get-it-done person. Without a doubt, she's who you want organizing your life. Mary roped Mike in as her co-author and then put together a team of 8 to 9 people to flesh out their research. And several years later, Viola, a book of stories about Woodland Cemetery. Has this book made me think of my own death? Mary pauses. My sister told me that even though I'm to be cremated, I should really have a stone at Woodland. And I thought about it, and that's what I did. Mary smiles, looking off into space. The book has made me appreciate people more. Here's all these people gone, some not forgotten, who were famous, but many of them forgotten for over 150 years. To think that someone will remember me for 150 years, that's cool. At least people might remember a couple of books I've written. Mary laughs at herself. A legacy, then? I feel like life is really short, but as someone said, as long as someone keeps saying your name, you're still alive. 2 or 3 years later, the caretaker's wife is sitting at home, and the dog is agitated trying to get her attention. Finally, the dog is making such a fuss that she follows the dog out of her bedroom. Minutes later, the ceiling crashes down. The house had been on fire. Both of them made it out alive. I thought I'd never live to be 66, says Mike. I don't think death is good or bad. However, as one of the stones has inscribed on it, words suggest, actions show. And the action doesn't have to be grandiose. We started putting in stones for veterans whose graves hadn't been marked, and we set a goal for 5. Now we've done over 300. I tell people not to be intimidated by the numbers. Just do one. So if you go to Woodlawn Cemetery and you're walking along the street, there's a little step and it says McBride on it. The step is the gravesite of the caretaker long ago who took Queen home. We thought as the step was so small, it was too small for you or me to step on, but perfect for Queen to rest upon. We like that thought. So there you have it, 2 characters and a dog leaving their mark on Woodland Cemetery. Thought that was fun. Thanks for listening, and I guess I'll chat with you later. So I thought that was like a really very cool little local story to hear about. There are local historians going through the cemeteries and even the story about the heroic canine. A little bit askance, but still really cool. And as you can hear, the ghost stories have certainly riled up the pugs. But I'm going to go ahead and insert one other story. So this comes from the last day that I was there. I was literally on the shuttle going back to the airport. And wouldn't you know it, the shuttle driver, it was a different person than I had worked with them before, had a great couple different stories that he was telling me about. But one, he told me that he had gone over a bridge, and I guess this is in Des Moines. He said he's only gone over it twice and he'll never do it again. Because the story was that this particular bridge was a site in the 40s of an argument between a husband and wife. And the argument got so heated that the wife took their baby out of the car and literally like got out of the car and started walking home. And the husband, unfortunately, was so irate that he charged at her in the car. And the only thing that she could do was throw the baby over the bridge, trying to save it, hoping that somehow it would hit the water and survive, I guess. And then she was hit by the car. Neither one survived, according to the local legend, but on certain nights, as you drive over the bridge, you are supposed to hear the baby crying. So I thought this was kind of interesting because he said the first time he went over the bridge, he thought this was an urban legend. He was a young man. He thought it was kind of a joke. So he rolls down his window and he's kind of going slowly over the bridge. And he actually said he heard the baby crying. It met the parameters of this manifestation. So he gets off the bridge. He goes and he finds his friends and he is freaked out. And he tells his friends about this and they say, oh, we don't believe you. And so he says, okay, come with me. They all pile into his car. And as they're going back over the bridge, he said the car stalled completely. The four of them got out and together they all heard the child crying. And they were so terrified that they basically ended up pushing the car off the bridge. Of course, it did start up again after that. And they refused to ever go back. I thought, oh, that's cool. Why do I not know about this bridge? I am not sure what bridge it is. So if you happen to know, if maybe that's not in Des Moines, maybe it's in Iowa, but send me a note. It sounds very familiar. I know I've heard this story before, but I have not been able to place it from my memory as of yet. But he also told me that, and he was much more verbose the first time I asked him about anything else concerning animals. And he said there was a beautiful pet cemetery that was very creepy near him that he had heard about. The first time he went into more detail, but when I asked permission to record him, all I got was like a 1 minute video so of this story. And we will insert it here. So if you happen to know of the cemetery and can send me a note, provided I go back, maybe I'll rent a car next time and I'll be able to go and find this and we'll do some more paranormal pets. So we are going to go ahead and listen to that right here.
I haven't really ventured in there, so.
You don't know for sure.
Correct.
That's pretty neat. How long has the cemetery been there? Do you know?
I've been here, I've heard stories about it since I was 10, 12? I'm 40 now, so.
At least 30 years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So do you know if there are any unusual animals buried there?
I don't know. I haven't ventured up there yet.
Okay. Oh, but that's neat. I like that they have a pet cemetery. That's sweet because it gives people a place to go and visit their pets.
It's off a gravel road, up through the hills,
So it's kind of secluded.
Oh yeah, it's just driving down there, you get that eerie,
the weird feeling.
What's gonna happen?
As long as there's no Cujo there, you're okay, right?
Yep.
All right. Very cool. All right, now that you have heard my videos, we are going to take a minute so that you can hear from our sponsors. And when we get back, we will do a little bit more on the paranormal. And I have some paranormal pet stories for you from Haunted in America. So we'll be right back after these messages.
Now, time for something really scary. A word from our sponsors. Paranormal pets will reappear before you can say Bigfoot. Don't run away.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your cat tree tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Did you hear that? Our commercials have mysteriously disappeared. Paranormal Pets is back with our haunted host, our ghost host,
Brandi Stark.
Hello and welcome back. So the only other thing I will tell you is that I had a great time. It was interesting to see how the story started to evolve when it came to the one location called Merle Hay Mall that I mentioned earlier. The first thing I heard was from my original shuttle driver who said, oh, you need to talk to the guy at the front desk because he knows about this haunted mall. So I talked to him next, and he said, yeah, that when he was a kid, his mother worked there. And one day he was waiting around for her after work, and he was a teenager, and he heard voices, and he followed the voices into a conference room. And he said he saw a circle of nuns standing there singing. He was like, what in the world? And he went out and he got his mom. He came back and nobody was there. And nobody had signed out the conference room. You know, he had no explanation for it. Neither did his mom. Well, as time goes on, I started to hear about a fire, something about an old mall. And there was a fire and there was a monastic order there and it had moved. And then there was a new mall. And I'm going, okay. So I started digging through, and happily enough, there were lots of remembrances about this, but I started looking for the history of the property. So the first thing I will tell you is that I was trying to figure out how you spelled Merle Hay. So I thought it was M-E-R-L-E-H-E, like one word, but it turns out it is a name, Merle Hay, H-A-Y. And he was either the first soldier in World War I to be killed, and he was from Iowa, or it's definite that he was the first Iowan killed in World War I. There's like a whole area named after him, like all of these plazas. The second thing I found out was that there was a monastic order there. So it was Catholic. And sure enough, there were monks and nuns who were there. It was closed and torn down. And the monks and nuns moved to a different location. And in 1959, they built the old mall. So finally, I was starting to get somewhere. And the old mall had, it was basically an open air mall. Well, they revamped it in the 70s and I guess created more of an enclosed mall. And shortly after it had been rebuilt and revamped, there was a store there called Yonkers. And on November 5th, 1978, a fire broke out in this department store. And what ended up happening, basically water dripped down on some of the wires in the restaurant portion of this Yonkers department store upstairs. It caused a fire, but because of the casings that were wrapped around the wires, the plastic that they used at the time to insulate the wires, caustic, just horribly acidic fumes were produced. And it was about 9:30 in the morning. It was before the mall opened, but there were about 15 people, employees who were there. Four or five of them managed to escape to the roof and they were rescued, but 10 died. And apparently it was so gruesome that the medical examiner had to bring out jewelry in order to identify the 10 who died. And it wasn't just the fire that killed them. Some of them were literally yards away from an exit, but had been overcome by these toxic fumes from the wires. So it turns out that they rebuilt the mall. They rebuilt Yonkers. It was there, I believe, until about 1985 and then has been replaced. And currently, at one point, I guess it was a conference room. And currently, it's a bowling alley, of all things. But I met some of the security folks who do say that, yes, at night, you will see shadowy figures kind of in the distance. And if you approach them, they disappear or they slip around a corner and vanish. One employee said that she usually felt like somebody was right behind her, watching her at all times, particularly when she was in the basement area. So Yonkers was built over an old part of the mall and it had a basement. I guess that's a big thing in the Midwest. So that was that. But it was all over the mall where she could feel like somebody was following her. And then apparently some employees mentioned they worked in the bowling alley, but at night when everything was shut down and they were working on the mechanics of the bowling alley, they would hear conversations and yet there was nobody there. They could never stop the conversations. They couldn't find the source of them, but they could always hear them. So it was like really, really cool. I was only there for about an hour and a half. I really didn't get a lot on readings, but oh well, what are you going to do? Other than go back, and now that I have my research in order, I have some other questions that I think I can ask. But the other really cool thing was that on the return trip, I had gotten a bunch of paranormal books after Halloween that were all discounted, or actually my mother had gotten them for me for Christmas because, you know, she's very good and understanding about this and just kind of goes, whatever you want, and gets them. One is called Haunted in America, True Ghost Stories from the Best of Leslie Rule Collection. And this is by Leslie Rule. And I got to finish the book in part because my plane came in late, but the plane that I was supposed to connect to was also running late, except the plane that I landed on was on one side of the airport, and the plane that I needed was on the other side of the airport, which was quite literally a mile apart. I ran all the way down there, and it turns out they had already released my seat, even though the plane had not left. I had told the stewardesses, and they refused to radio ahead for me. They were literally putting, I couldn't believe this, they were literally putting the standby people on the plane while I stood there saying, but I have a ticket right here that I purchased for this plane. And the reason that I'm late is because your plane was late and nobody would call down here. I had to sit for another 2 hours. It was lovely. And if you can guess the airlines, good for you, but I will be avoiding it from here on out. So I got down to the last chapter of my book and I got so excited because chapter 16 in Haunted in America is about paranormal pets. So I thought I would just read you a couple of these stories. One is the Cranberry Cat. I thought this was fun. When the waitress saw the elderly lady seated at a table at the Cranberry Inn, she approached her with a smile, but the waitress's smile vanished when the woman did, right before her eyes. The small white-haired lady had appeared several times over the years, always at the same table. She always disappeared the instant anyone walks towards her. And I love that because that's such a ghost thing. The Cranberry Inn in Cranberry, New Jersey is a special place. It was created from historic buildings, including two 18th century stagecoach structures that started the inn's tradition of warm welcomes nearly 300 years ago. Today, it is stunningly beautiful with an open interior that makes it a choice spot for weddings. It's also known for its fine cuisine and for the fact that it's haunted. It's a peaceful kind of haunting with benign spirits attached to the place that held significance for them when they were living beings, though the histories of the people they once were is not always clear. Owners Tom and Gay Ingenjin, it's I-N-G-E-G-N-E-R-I, I'm just going to spell it, suspect the dining room ghost is Mrs. Mack, a lady who once lived in a room on the upper floor and passed away in 1972. If Mrs. Mack had pets, that might explain why the apparition of animals are also seen at the Cranberry Inn. We have five people ghosts and a ghost cat and a ghost dog, Gay told me. The cat has been seen by a bartender and many of the customers. She often feels the kitty brush past her ankles and has caught glimpses of it from the corner of her eye. Many people have described the ghostly cat and dog to her, but Gay is tight-lipped when it comes to describing the pet's colors and markings. When someone describes the ethereal pets in the exact way that others have, Gay can be certain the sighting is legitimate. I spoke with customer Sharon Hecker about the night that she and two friends, Joanne and Roseanne, enjoyed Christmas dinner at the inn. While they dined, the topic of hauntings came up. They had heard about the inn's ghostly pets and were intrigued. When the trio went into the ladies' room after dinner, Roseanne said, I'd never seen a ghost. I would love to see one. She ducked into a stall, and Joanne and Sharon were chatting by a sink when they witnessed a surprising sight. It was the back end of a cat, Joanne told me. We saw its back legs and tail, Sharon added, and it disappeared. Roseanne exited the stall too late to see the ghostly cat. I always miss the good stuff, she cried. As they left the restroom, all three of us heard a resounding meow, said Sharon. To say we were startled is an understatement. And if you're interested, the Cranberry Inn is 21 South Main Street, Cranberry, New Jersey, 08512. TheCranberryInn.com is the website, and the phone is 609-655-5595. We'll do one more, and then we'll call this episode of Des Moines Potpourri Stories done. This one is called Little Joe. Wally, Uncle Wally, Beastie, Booty Girl, Turtle, Piggy Piggy, Sister Smudge, Amber, Snickers, Little Joe. Before they found refuge in Anita Morrison's Portland, Oregon backyard sanctuary, these 10 beautiful felines lived the hard life of America's millions of feral cats. Feral cats are simply cats born without homes and not tamed by humans. They seek shelter in places like abandoned buildings and overgrown blackberry bushes. They live on rodents and garbage pail scraps. Unprotected, their lives are often short, but the population continues to grow as they breed and breed and breed. Anita first became aware of the feral cat dilemma when an elderly wheelchair-bound neighbor began feeding a couple of stray cats. Not spayed or neutered, the cats bred, and before too long, over 100 cats were swarming the neighborhood. It tugged at Anita's heartstrings to see the scrawny homeless creatures. I got involved with the Feral Cat Coalition of Oregon, explained Anita, a grandmother of five. She began trapping the strays in a humane have a heart trap and got them spayed and neutered. 19 years later, she is still doing her part to help the hapless kitties. In fact, she and her husband Joe have turned their backyard into an oasis for feral cats, complete with cozy little houses. While most feral cats are wary of humans and won't let them close, one special cat won Anita's heart, and she won his. Little Joe was a big white and gray boy with a little dot beneath his nose. He loved to play with the humans. He liked to fetch acorns, she remembered fondly. They nicknamed him the mayor because he always welcomed new cats. Whenever a strange cat wandered into the yard, Little Joe would eagerly greet him and then show him to the food dish. It was like he was saying, "This is a great place. Look, they have food and toys." Anita smiled at the memory, but her eyes saddened as she told me of Little Joe's tragic end. He was hit by a car, and she and her husband were devastated as they prepared to bury him. "I wish we had gotten a picture of him," she said sadly. As they looked around at the surviving cats, they realized they had no photos of any of them. We rushed out and got some film. Anita got out her Olympus camera and took a roll of pictures of her backyard kitties. When she and Joe went to pick up the photos, they sat in their car and looked over at the snapshots. Suddenly, Anita gasped, and then they both started crying. For there, smack in the middle of a photo, was the undeniable image of Little Joe. He sat behind the food trough between Amber and Booty Girl. Little Joe is slightly transparent, allowing the lines of the shed behind him to show through his body. But other than that, he appears just as he did in life. I learned of the extraordinary photo taken with ordinary film through a friend of Anita's, and it took some coaxing for her to allow me to include her story in this book. "I just don't want Little Joe to be exploited," Anita insisted. "Little Joe's story will help a lot of people feel better," I told her. "It will comfort them to see his pictures and to know that their pet's spirits live on." She finally agreed to allow me to use the amazing image of the cat's ghost. "I'd like the best possible prints," I told her. "It would be better if you could have one made from the original negative rather than a copy." Anita misunderstood my request, so when she couldn't find the negative, she sent photos to Kodak to have a new negative made. Soon, she received a phone call from a puzzled Kodak employee. "There's a problem with the photo," said the woman. "Oh," Anita replied. "The cat is transparent," said the woman. "Yes," said Anita. "He looks like a ghost," said the woman. "So a picture tells a thousand stories." And then it does say, and I like this part, "For information on how to help feral cats, please visit feralcats.com. So there are a couple more stories in here, but I kind of feel like we have talked for a while. And so what I would like to do is to remind everybody out there to please be kind. Keep your pets indoors this summer. At least in Florida, we are currently in our preheating stage. Wish me luck with my last set of puppies for a while, I hope, as one of them is walking by me carrying off my shoe. Thank you, Penny. Support rescues. And until the next time, happy haunting. Take care.
Pet Life Radio presents Paranormal Pets, where you can always expect the unexpected. Each week, we'll discuss all aspects of weird or spiritual animal encounters, ghosts, totems, psychic animals, animal souls, animal angels, and animals in religion, with a little cryptozoology thrown in. Step into the supernatural world of pets every week only on PetLifeRadio.com.